everyone, and welcome to this It's Your Season.life podcast. It is Tuesday, March the 26th, and this is a follow-up to an article that I wrote in Substack about Christspiracy, the recent documentary that came out last week. Came out on the 20th. We actually saw it on Sunday the 24th, which was Palm Sunday. And it's very thought-provoking, and I keep listening to it and thinking in my head and thinking about what are some of the takeaways. So I wanted to go ahead and keep digesting a little bit and parsing it out on what it really means and what just eating well and living well means in relationships to our health and our spiritual life as well. So did we really need one more reason to eat more plants and less or no meat? Well, apparently so. And this... does support, I guess, however you look at it, the evidence that perhaps we should not be eating meat because of religious or spiritual reasons. I know it's hard to believe. The general population just can't seem to get its arms around just eating more plants and less or no meat. But personally, I do understand the dilemma, as it was I was one of those in the general population who knew and really just didn't have the motivation to make a change until cancer entered our family and spousal pictures. Maybe some heart disease, maybe some personal reasons of cancer, and also a long history of cardiovascular disease in my own family. So I kind of get that. I totally get that. But perhaps Christspiracy will do that for another subset of the population who don't want to eat plants for health or the environment and just the overall grossness of what we do to animals, but maybe to reach a closer connection with whatever higher being they honor or worship in the ethical and moral vein of thou shalt not kill. So to get a start, though, I do want to just kind of walk through some of the other reasons that are out there to eat more plants and less meat that are kind of so obvious it's hard to believe. So there are many reasons to eat less meat, including just the weirdness of ingesting blood. I think about that a lot when I'm in the kitchen. It's not usually reality until you abstain from it for a while, and once you go back to eating meat, gosh, there's this awareness you're ingesting some kind of blood, muscle, sinew. It's kind of in your kitchen. It starts looking kind of gross. But what do you do with that feeling or awareness? Kind of once you look down, you go, wow, I think I'm eating something that maybe was alive. Perhaps preparing, cooking, and eating becomes a bit more sacred in nature than indulgent. I enjoyed reading Ansel Keys' Seven Country Study and the follow-up with his cookbook, Eating Well. He talks about indulgent eating in the 50s and 60s and how it kept going. So I love that term, indulgent, that we indulge every single day. There's nothing special. We're just consistently indulgent. Yeah, so maybe there's a life form that gave up something so we could eat them. That should be just a little bit more in the public domain than it is. We have the joy of visually seeing cute pink pigs, pure white chickens with red combs, and adorable heifers with bright eyes. Just think about all that marketing with cute heifers and eyes and eyelashes, rather than the grossness of how these animals are really produced in the commercial marketplace. It's pretty gross when you think about it. So just a reminder that I'm mostly plant-based and in no way dissing ranchers and farmers who are trying to do the same, better quality of life on the ground, literally hooves on the grounds, you know, claws on the grounds for these animals. Certainly my grandpa, I've talked about this in my podcasts and writing, never dawned on me in the 60s when my grandpa had these chicken farms. And they were packed in cages, and we were told to be like really quiet because the chickens will get nervous and they won't lay, and then he won't have an income. But it was really fascinating watching the egg kind of roll out on the little metal cages down so we could pick them up. And so, you know, I get all that of what we did in the 50s and 60s to increase the production of our farmers in the realm of big ag and look, making communism look bad because we have plenty of food. We are a rich country. I get all that. But I think we can kind of move on from that as well. So when we think about health, the data is pretty clear that eating less meat and more plants is a healthier and more premium lifestyle. You really have a better quality of life toward the ends of your life with fewer meds. You can possibly have higher longevity, reduced rates of cancer, heart disease. Sometimes there's even possibilities of reducing incidence of other comorbid conditions. So just think about when is the last time your primary care physician or your specialist in any category said, here's a pill, but gosh, while you're at it, the best thing you can do is shift your lifestyle. It's just not part of our American medicine process. It's not part of our healthcare. It's almost like they're afraid or they're not trained, honestly. There's studies out there, they get very little nutritional training. There's not time when you're in there. They're trying to roll patients through 10 to 15 minute increments. So it's really not a lot of time to talk about lifestyle. And then actually, how are they sharing the data? But the data's been around for a long time, ever since Ansel Keys did his studies. You have the nurses study, you have the Adventist health studies, you have the Framingham heart studies. There are so many long-term studies out there that really show the benefits of a more plant-forward lifestyle for improving health outcomes rather than this heavy meat carnivore diet that's out there now and really proposed in all the marketplaces, not just, gosh, YouTube influencers, podcasters, eat meat. If you notice, a lot of even the researchers that I follow start talking about those that have promoted high meat diets are actually dying early in their 40s, 50s of cardiovascular disease. So it's everywhere. You know, we are just inundated with eating meat, whether it's a billboard with a hamburger or even like just cooking magazines and so forth. Just focus on meat first. And I get that because that was me. That was how I grew up and how many of us grew up. But we need to move forward. Let's talk about the environment. So again, the evidence is really very clear that the commercial animal industry harms not only the environment, both at the local level and downstream. Kind of think about North Carolina and what the pig farmers are doing to the waterways and the soil. Just think about what we are doing with our waterways and soil with commercial ag farming. And then also what we're doing also with just general farming of having to use a lot of nitrogen and a lot of monocropping so that we can feed those cows and those chickens and those pigs. It almost, at some point, ought to go, wow, we are growing crops to feed animals that make us unhealthy and also harm the environment. So absolutely, there's a lot of data out there about cows and raising cattle and what it does to the environment, to the methane, to the greenhouse gases and so forth, you know, along with what we're doing to the Amazon. Thinking about 90% of our food that we eat in the United States alone is grown in commercial agricultural farms somewhere, and it's very possible it's coming from South America. So, you know, we'd also look at maybe the projected meat protein requirements for this growing population. There's a lot of data out there on what's going to happen between 2035, which is not that far away, up until 2050. How are we going to feed the world's population by 2050? Because it's just unsustainable for us to eat the amount of protein that we are eating, and I mean animal protein, for the world in 2050. And so this is why we're seeing a lot of these products coming to market and being tested, these plant-based proteins and more about cellular-based proteins, even insects. I know that sounds pretty gross, but it's out there. I went to a very interesting conference last fall called the Reducetarian Summit, And I was overwhelmed with what's happening in the animal meat replacement industry, whatever that looks like. And there's a lot going out in that space. Let's talk about the animals then. So driving around the Midwest, I do that quite a bit because my in-laws are in Nebraska. I have one in-law left in a nursing home, and I go see her in North Platte, Nebraska. And on the way on I-80, there are multiple huge feedlots that smell. They just smell. When I drive through them, I used to not think a whole lot about it until I became more aware of it and realized how much just ammonia smell is in the atmosphere, not to mention all the grossness of what's happening to how they're raised. They're standing in their poop, and all of that manure has to go somewhere, and it pretty much probably goes into the waterways. It gets filtered down and gets placed somewhere downstream. So I find it interesting that when we drive out west, it's very easy to go, oh my God, look at all this land. There, it's not a problem. We can park the grossness somewhere not in my backyard, which is probably somewhere in some small town in rural America. We park that climate and environmental damage to these small rural towns. Even in North Platte, they're looking at building a whole nother animal processing center, which there's got to be a better way. But think about it. When these animals are shipped and to market in places like Greeley, Colorado, which is not far from where I'm at, you really never see the animal manufacturing process. We see those big eyes and eyelashes. But if the wind is right in Fort Collins, you can smell the ugliness of the trade, and I kid you not. The wind just has to shift. Some people call it money. I'm beginning to call it death. That's what it is. I'm very thankful to Tim Bulk-Randon, who fine-tuned the animal processing system so they have a much calmer, lower emotional impact system on the animals that are heading into the slaughterhouse. But think about why that is needed in the first place. Because the majority of our human population feels they still need to eat large quantities of beef, pork, lamb, and poultry to be healthy. I don't care if that's a pork chop or if that's a pork skin. We think we have to have something part of an animal to eat. Just know that most of our antibiotics go to this model. They don't go to humans. And I was just listening to the radio today, NPR, talking about Chick-fil-A, who touts that there are no antibiotics in their chicken. They're going to be changing their tune a little bit about that. So think about what you're doing. You're crowding animals into a huge facility, just like humans. What do? We pass infections. Animals do the same thing. Which then takes us to the spirituality kind of piece of this, is where Christspiracy comes in. So I really never thought about the spiritual component until I started studying and experiencing different religions in Houston, including one called Jainism. I hope I'm saying that right. Anyway, honestly, after I attended a community meal in the early 2000s that was fully plant-based, it was just kind of weird to me. Honestly, this was 20 years ago. Like, why do these people not eat meat? Like, we're having lentils, and they're just the happiest people ever. Just all kinds of beautiful grains and legumes. It still didn't dawn on me what was going on either, except that they chose not to eat meat because their religion is really do no harm. Even if it's a cricket on the ground, even if it's an insect, it's do no harm to something living. But kind of fast forwarding a little bit through more experiences and reading the Adventist health studies, their biblical interpretations of the body as a temple, some conceptual thoughts about Veritatis from St. Hildegard and St. Gregory, you know, really thinking more about what the Bible says about eating animals, that pretty much brings us to Christspiracy. So I don't want to give away all the goods about the film, except that the film, although entitled using the word Christ, is, for me, in effect, a treatise and discovery march on how religions address killing animals for sacrifice or food. And it led to a lot of questions last night in the middle of the night. I had to wake up and write them down. But, you know, the primary question they were trying to answer is there a spiritual way to kill an animal? and it's pursued. They literally traverse the globe looking for answers to that question among the world religions, along with the next question: how would Jesus kill an animal? Along with probably how would Buddha kill an animal? How would a lot of these religious entities, spiritual entities, kill an animal? I think the reason they use the word Christ, in my opinion, is because more than 60% of the U.S. population is Christian. And so the Christ premise is obviously directed, in my opinion, to directly reach out to our population and its meat hunger. But in reality, the majority of the film addresses how other faiths consider killing animals in their religious practices. There are some pretty gross things that are happening in there, and linking the spiritual basics of all religions back to Christianity. Because at the time of Christianity, there were a lot of these other religions floating around. There's a lot out there that I've read, you know, Jesus going to India. I've read a lot of books about this, about Paul researching the history of veganism and history of vegetarianism. It goes back a long way. This is not a new thing. We've been trying to figure out what to do with animals for millennia. So really, for my husband and I, there were some aha moments to think about throughout the movie that we just wanted to run back home and research for ourselves, go, oh, that's interesting, let's check their work. So, like, for example, there's a non-canonical gospels that are mentioned as supporting evidence for the posit that Jesus was an animal activist against mass animal slaughter at the temple during his Den of Thieves campaign. In addition, there was a supposition that Nazareth was not a place, but kind of a state of religious being or spirituality. And for lack of a better phrase, I don't want to give away the movie thread, but it was quite intriguing and really beckoned more personal research. So some things that came to my mind in the middle of the night as I was continuing to think about this movie and thinking about, you know, the original question, is there a spiritual way to kill an animal? Then the real question then I think starts, why is that important? Because, you know, we think of sentientism, okay, sentient beings, beings with feelings. And animal activism particularly focuses on animal sentism. Do animals have feelings? Do they cry? Do they hurt? Do they have in pain? So you look at your own pet and you think, wow, you know, my pet's in pain. But, you know, is it possible that a chicken has pain? Is a pig have pain? Does a cow have pain? And if so, should I care if a chicken or a cow or a pig has pain? We don't really think about that because it's kind of hidden behind the walls of the animal industry. But it really just kind of made me think about that, you know, our own pets. A lot of us think our pets are special, they're sentient, and maybe they do have spirits. We celebrate them going over the rainbow bridge, right? There's a lot, you know, all dogs go to heaven. I've had priests do sermons about, or post sermons about, you know, dogs going to heaven. We think about St. Francis and the animals. And so I guess the next question is really, do animals have spirits? And so, yeah, do you believe that your animal, any animal, has a spirit? If they're sentient beings, do they have some kind of a spirit? That kind of gets us into the whole piece of the movie about the dominion. You know, is dominion mean we have power, or is dominion mean we have, do we care? And that's a whole different conversation. Yeah, just some things about spirituality and animals. It sounds kind of woo-woo, but in the big scheme of things, look at what a lot of us do now. We look at our pet, we want to give them the best possible life they can. We feel like we communicate with a pet, right? Our dogs, our cats. God, I love my cats and dogs. But, you know, do I think they have a spirit? Well, maybe that's why we have this connection with them, that maybe they do. I don't know. Maybe that will be like the next documentary, Animals and Spirituality. So then that leads to the question, then if animals do have a spirit, then how do you kill something with a spirit? And God knows, as humans, we do that all the time. You know, we kill people. And that is maybe why God said, thou shalt not kill, because it's a living being. And that living being maybe does come from some kind of life force and some spirit, whether it's like the religious spirit of Catholicism or Judaism, or just the spirit of Saint, that might be saying this as well as I would like, but as Saint Hildegard talks about the veritatis, the greening of the soul, the connection with the life force in the earth and in the universe, that that spirit is a piece of life. So really, it just made me think even more about animals. I mean, animals from a living sense, animals from, gosh, I didn't know some of those other religions did what they did, and I won't give it away because it would be good to see this. If you're good at exploration, if you want to stay in the middle and really look at all the data, I don't want to give away all the goods because I think it's important to see this movie. It's getting mixed reviews, and certainly I have some mixed reviews and thoughts about it as well, but it gave me some nuggets to take home, and it woke me up in the middle of the night thinking, you know, we play around with this idea that animals are pets, the whole idea of carnism, it's different. Pets have spirits, but all the others don't. Well, if that's the case, then you move that over to humanity, which is we're living forces and beings. Some people have spirits and some people don't. Is that true? I'm not really sure. I don't want to think that way. I think even evil people have a spirit. They have a life force. That's why God said, do not kill. And so thinking about just killing, can you kill humanely? Can you kill an animal, euthanize them humanely? I think so. We do that a lot with our pets when we don't want them to suffer. But do we kill animals to reduce their suffering, or are we reducing them because they think they would look great on a grill? And I think that's two different conversations. So yeah, lots to kind of parse out. There's lots of reasons to eat more plants and eat less meat. I'm not saying you have to go 100% all in. The data shows that if you eat a little bit at the top of the pyramid, it's still better for you than a carnivore diet. But certainly eating more fruits and vegetables and grains and legumes and all those wonderful things are a healthier dietary pattern. You think about when you get away from meat and eating more of that and really enjoying the prep, like I talked about in one of my other podcasts, the whole becoming attuned with what you eat when you're actually doing the meal prep and you're cutting the vegetables and you're scraping off the peel or you're repurposing the peel or all the things that you do when you actually cook and prepare really does bring you a bit closer to earth. It does, I think, in my opinion, greens your soul. I never thought about that till I read St. Hildegard, and I'm like, Gregory and Hildegard might have something that's applicable that kind of helps you connect. Maybe it's an age thing. Maybe I'm just getting older in life and in my 60s, and I think during that time we start wanting to get closer to our higher being. We have no idea where we're going, but we want to know we want to go where the good stuff is. So just a lot to parse out with Christspiracy. I didn't want to give away too much because I think everyone should be surprised when they go into the documentary and be able to take out what they will appreciate. I'm not really sure it's a conspiracy in itself, other than, you know, I've studied St. Paul. I know he was a good marketer. I know he was Roman. He knew how to work the Roman system. And I think there is some data that says he knew that Christianity was going to keep the Roman Empire together and move towards a Holy Roman Empire. So there's some interesting books about that. I guess the other question that was in the movie was, you know, was it possible to be a vegetarian back then? I think so, because like Pythagoras was, some of the very highly intelligent polymaths throughout the centuries have been vegetarian, have eaten less meat and a lot more plants for whatever reason, whether it's just I just feel better because I eat that way, or I'm more creative, or I'm more at one in nature. I can be part of the labyrinth, whatever that might be. Maybe there is a piece to the Lamb of God. So lots to parse out, lots for you to think about when you watch the documentary. Yeah, just a lot to think about when you're trying to figure out what to do with the animal question. You know, what do we do with the animals? Just something to think about. So I hope this was a kind of a thought-provoking podcast. I'm going to probably think about this some more. Might even do a follow-up as I continue to dwell and do some more research. But thanks for joining me. As I said, this was an Eating Well and Living Well podcast. I hope you took some nuggets home. Go do some research. Do your own thinking. Do your own introspection. Go walk a labyrinth. Go look at some plant roots. Go play in the dirt. Yeah, go eat some microgreens. That's always my favorite. But anyway, thanks for joining me. Thanks for listening. And until next time, let's just eat more plants. Hey, everyone. Thanks for joining me today. I hope you have a new tip for eating more veg. Give me a shout out with comments or suggestions for future podcasts. And be sure and check out my website. Follow my cooking demos on YouTube under either Lisa Boesen, B-O-E-S-E-N, or itsyourseason.life. And if you need a recipe, visit me on Amazon and other online book retailers. And remember, it's always your season to eat more veg. So let's get cooking. Hey, everyone. Thanks for joining me today. I hope you have a new tip for eating more veg. Give me a shout out with comments or suggestions for future podcasts. And be sure and check out my website. Follow my cooking demos on YouTube under either Lisa Boesen, B-O-E-S-E-N, or itsyourseason.life. And if you need a recipe, visit me on Amazon and other online book retailers. And remember, it's always your season to eat more veg. So let's get cooking.